Welcome to our podcast topic on genes two choices, understanding genetic risk disclosure. I'm Jit Ying.
And I'm Rebecca.
We are both final year students from the law faculty of the University of Malaya. Today, we will delve into the mysteries of our DNA and explore how it shapes our lives. So have you ever wondered how much your family history can reveal about your own health risk, or how to strike the balance between knowing and not knowing? We are here to explore the implication of genetic testing and the ethical considerations. We will look at how this information impacts our personal decision, relationship, and our understanding of ourselves. So, whether you are considering genetic testing, working in the field, or just curious about the intersection of genetics and family dynamics, this episode is for you. Let's dive into the world of genetic familial risk disclosure and find out what it really means for our lives. So today, we are incredibly grateful for the opportunity to speak with our distinguished guest, Dr. Serene Ong. Dr. Serene did her PhD research focusing on the disclosure of genetic risk information to family members. Dr. Serene, who also sits on the Southeast Asian Bioethics Network Steering Committee, is particularly interested in ethical issues arising from emerging technologies such as genetic testing, precision medicine, and AI. Thank you so much, Dr. Serene, for taking the time to join us and to share your invaluable knowledge and expertise for today's podcast. So to start off, for many of our listeners, genetic testing might be an unfamiliar concept. So we need some help, Dr. Serene. Could you explain what genetic testing is and why it is so important?
Okay, so genetic testing is a scientific process that involves analyzing an individual's DNA to identify specific genes, mutations, or what is called variations that may indicate a predisposition to certain diseases or health conditions. So genetic tests are performed on samples of blood, hair, skin, amniotic fluid, or other tissues. So there are two main reasons why genetic testing is important. I mean, of course, there are others, but two main reasons are for diagnosis and for predictive reasons. So for the patient, genetic testing helps identify the presence of genetic mutations that cause various inherited disorders and guide treatment decisions. So genetic testing is also used predictively, so it can assess an individual's risk for certain hereditary conditions such as cancer. So knowing one's genetic risk can encourage proactive health monitoring and preventive measures like screening. So specific to my research, genetic testing can also help families understand inherited conditions that run through the family and manage potential risk. So because if the patient's condition is hereditary, then related family members also have a risk of carrying that condition.
So, Dr. Serene, we are quite curious. So what drew you into this field of genetic testing? And what keeps you so passionate about this?
I think it's the uncertainty. And okay, so there's a couple of things about knowing your genetic risk. One is that the information is uncertain, it's a bit predictive. At the same time, it's also, once you know the information, it's you can't take it back, right? It's like opening Pandora's box. And so the whole idea of telling the family seems very problematic, right? It's not like an object, you can hold it. If they change their minds, if the family members change their minds about knowing, you can take back the knowledge. But once you inform the family, it's permanent. So it's a rather fraught decision on the patient's side. Like, do I want to tell them?
Okay, thank you, doctor, for sharing. So now talking about genetic testing, It also raises an important question about ownership. Many people might wonder who actually owns the genetic information. Is it owned by the patient, the family, or the wider community? We would like to hear your thought on this.
Okay, so before I get to my personal opinion and what the current opinions are on this, bit of history. So back in the, say, 1990s, right, the way we viewed genetic information, the predominant approach was that genetic information was the property of the patient. So call this the property approach. Okay, and however, by the 2000s, this perception of genetic information underwent a significant transformation. So, in contrast to the idea that genetic information was personal and therefore the property of the individual, another school of thought held that genetic information was global public goods. So, call this the public goods approach. So, in 1997, UNESCO released the Universal Declaration of the Human Genome and Human Rights, for example, and in this document, it declared that the human genome was symbolically the heritage of humanity. And then all these changes occurred because there was the completion of the Human Genome Project in 2003, and there was a lot of population biobanks that was being set up in countries like the UK and Japan. And these large scientific projects positioned genetic data as a public or common good. So since then, our understanding of genetic information has become more nuance, somewhere between these two views, the property and the public goods approaches. It's both property as well as public goods. So right now we do have objections to the property approach, but instinctively we still retain the narrative of ownership, right? Because probably because it's intuitive. We will say things like my DNA, right? And we continue to rely on individual consent for genetic testing. But we also understand that genetic data is shared with family and with the wider community. So personally, I think of genetic information as simultaneously personal as well as shared. So all of it belongs to the patient, but some of it belongs to the family because it's shared with the family. And I think rather than discussing who owns the data, perhaps we should reframe the issue as who should have a say in control of the data, right? So while the patient has privacy rights under some circumstances, the patient also has a responsibility to consult with relevant family members.
I think we did mention about consent just now. So we want to know what are the key elements that should be included in the informed consent process for genetic testing.
Well, I think first is that genetic testing is voluntary. Of course, we all know this, but it's easy to be overlooked because if your doctor recommends testing, then you as the patient might feel like you have no choice but to do so, because they have provided their professional opinion. But that's not the case. I mean, genetic testing is completely voluntary. The second thing that should be provided in the informed consent process is, of course, information about the test. Like, why is it recommended? What does it test for? How will the prognosis and management of the condition be impacted by the results? I mean, like, what's the point of testing? And third, information about the test results. So, what kind of results will be returned? What does positive results mean? What is negative? And then there's a third kind called, we're not sure, variant of uncertain significance. And this is actually a problem for many, many of us in Asia because most of the public data banks out there are based on Caucasian data. So I know for a fact that in Singapore, the likelihood that you will get a VUS is a lot higher than in other countries. And what about secondary findings? So things like you want to test for, say, a certain cancer, but maybe you actually have the option to opt for a larger panel of testing, and you can find out other secondary results. You want to find out more as well. Fourth, what are the limitations of the test? So this is quite important because even if a patient tests positive for a certain condition, the test can't determine if the patient will develop the symptoms And if they develop the symptoms, how severe the symptoms will be, and whether and how the condition will progress over time. And five or fifth is with the implications for family. So if the condition is hereditary, and there is a risk that genetically related relatives will carry the condition as well. So should the patient inform those family members and how? What does it mean for them? And finally, the potential risk of genetic discrimination and legal protections. So, but in Singapore, for example, there isn't an explicit law to protect against genetic discrimination. So this has been highlighted, and this might have insurance implications. So of course, this is quite a localized set of information, very contextualized, but has to be highlighted by the doctor. Of course, most patients would just go ahead with the testing if they need it, but it's something that they should be aware of.
All right, so doctor, from your viewpoint, how do we ensure that the individuals fully understand the implication of genetic testing?
This is actually quite a difficult question because, we say that informed consent is an important requirement, but whether it is effective and valid are completely separate and also very valid concerns. So genetic testing is a complicated topic, and just because I tell you all the information doesn't mean that you may fully understand the implications of genetic testing. So for effective consent, the individual must have the competence to understand the information presented. So very often, a lot of patients complain that the consent forms are overly complex, which might be a problem for some individuals who are unfamiliar with the topic or have difficulty reading. So we will need to assess the patient comprehension, ensure that the information is presented in an understandable way, and the consent forms are readable. So perhaps the use of multimedia and audio-video presentations might be helpful. Some individuals will also need more time and extended discussions. So this is a very case-by-case basis. Some people might need more explanation and more time. But an individual's competence is not only dependent on their education level. So other factors such as age, disease severity, health conditions, fear and anxiety may affect an individual's decisional capacity. So if a patient is stressed by a recent diagnosis of cancer or affected by therapy treatments, these factors can result in poor patient understanding as well. So having support, particularly from family members and friends, can help that patient process the information. So informed consent shouldn't be regarded as an isolated event, but a continuous and dynamic process. It's a two-way communication channel between the healthcare provider and patient that requires trust. So if the patient feels reassured to speak up and ask about the parts that they are unsure about, their understanding will be much better.
So, in relation to a patient's autonomy as to whether or not for the patient to disclose his or her genetic information, so we can then expect that there might be some conflicts within the patient and the family or the community expectation. So, have there been any situation where such conflicts have arisen? And if there is so, can doctor share us some examples on it?
Okay, I can give two examples. So both patients have familial hypercholesterolemia or FH. This is hereditary high cholesterol. So FH is autosomal dominant, which means that there is a 50% chance that first degree relatives will also carry the same variant. Okay, so the first patient was in her 20s, and her doctor at the specialist clinic recommended genetic testing and that she tells her family members of her possible diagnosis of FH. Recall that she hasn't done the genetic test yet. It's just that the doctor suspects, based on her case history, that she's likely to have a hereditary high cholesterol. Okay, so, and since this patient has a twin, so especially the twin should be informed. So initially, the patient seemed keen to get tested. Then later, the patient came back and declined testing. She told the doctor that her father didn't want her to get tested. Now, the patient is already in her 20s, so past the age of consent. She don't need to get parents' consent. And as an adult, the patient should be able to just make their own decision. But in this case, because the father was quite insistent that she didn't get tested, so the patient didn't get tested. The father also didn't forbid her from telling the rest of the family members, including the twin. So after a while, the patient also stopped going to the specialist clinic, saying that she can manage her high cholesterol levels with visits to the GP or the polyclinic. So in this case, it appears that the patient's individual autonomy was constrained by her father's demands. So, and not only that, the father's demands not only affected the patient, but the other family members as well, who might have benefited from the risk information. Okay, then the second case was slightly different. There's another patient, she also has FH. She's a lot older. She has three adult sons, but she's estranged from them. So she refused to tell them about her diagnosis and therefore their risk. So she also refused to provide consent for a doctor or a healthcare provider to inform the sons on her behalf. So in this case, the patient's preferences are in conflict with possible benefits to family. She doesn't want to tell them, even when it could have possible benefits to her sons. So we might think that she ought to inform her sons. However, our expectation conflicts with respect for the patient's autonomy and confidentiality.
All right, so following on with our previous question, how do we balance the ethical consideration between individual autonomy and the collective needs of families and communities in the context of genetic information?
I think this is an extremely difficult question because I would argue that a universal approach is a one-size-fits-all approach will not be suitable because what is appropriate may depend on concrete circumstances. So there are a lot of contextual issues, like what are the specifics of the hereditary condition, the nature of the information, the relationship between the patient and a particular family member. By relationship, I mean not just the biological relationship and also the social relationship, how close they are. The benefit of the information if shared with their relative, potential repercussions if the information is known to unauthorized others, and also its sensitivity of the information on the patient's private lives. So all these contextual issues matter a great deal and can only be assessed on a case-by-case basis. That said, currently approaches to disclosure of genetic information are dominated by an individual-centric paradigm. So that is to say, disclosure and other decisions around the genetic decisions depend solely on the patient. So in some cases, this may not be the best way to deal with information. So say we have a patient who's not married, has no children, has no siblings. We might say, well, fair enough. What you do with this information is up to you. But if the patient has dependents or siblings, then we may argue that the patient has obligations to their family. So in my work, I argue that a relational approach, which takes into account the relationships around the family, would be more appropriate than an individual-centric approach. So balancing
So,
all these ethical considerations, you have to first identify the relevant parties, getting the relevant facts, and identifying the ethical values and issues. So, and then you consider what are the options available to you, and the final decisions will then depend on balancing all the presumptive ethical issues, values, and options available for the case. So it can very well differ from patient to patient, or even like country to country, or disease to disease.
other than ethical issue that surround patient's autonomy, are there any other bioethical considerations that surface with regards to genetic risk disclosure?
Okay, there are a few. I will just highlight two. Okay, so the first consideration to take into account is the relationship between the doctor and patient. Okay, so depending on the condition, the doctor may advise the patient to disclose to at-risk family members. Now, this advice is based on benefit to family and also based on respect for the patient's autonomy. So the final decision lies with the patient. However, because it is the doctor who is giving the advice, patients are very likely to be influenced by that advice. Okay, so the same advice coming from a non-medical person will be treated differently by the patient as compared to advice coming from a doctor. So the words of a medical professional would carry a lot more weight. So I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it's something that must be taken into consideration. The second issue, bioethical issue, is that of social justice, specifically resource limitations. So say the patient informs the family, what happens next? Relatives are advised to act on information, but some relatives may not be able to afford screening and testing. So some communities are privileged, some are not so privileged. So the issue of genetic risk disclosure can become moot because the patient may not even be diagnosed with having a hereditary condition in the first place, or have access to healthcare in the first place, or their family members also have the same issues. So a core ethical challenge in bioethics is identifying inequalities and attending to the imbalances to of access to resources.
Dr. Serene, we are also curious about the professional guidelines governing the genetic risk disclosure in Singapore. So, are there any specific guidelines currently in place?
Professional guidelines.
Yeah.
It is individual centric, so it is still ultimately based on the patient. So the doctor can only provide advice and recommendations that the patient tell, but the patient ultimately makes a choice. So two things can happen. If the patient say, I will tell, okay, it's like two negative scenarios can happen. The patients they want to tell, and then they walk out the clinic, and then they actually don't tell, right? The doctor has no way of checking up. So you just have to take the patient at their word for it. That's like passive non-disclosure. And maybe the patient does want to tell, but they forgot or they couldn't contact the relative. And then sometimes the patient actively says they don't want to tell the relative. And then the doctor does face a dilemma. Should they breach the patient's confidentiality and tell? Regulations will say only in very severe cases, if there's a high risk of severe harm to the family member, then they should tell. This has not really been challenged in Singapore.
So perhaps you can discuss this in a wider approach, like for example in Malaysia and Singapore, which are multiracial in nature. So in what ways do family dynamics influence genetic risk disclosure in different cultures?
I think Singapore and Malaysia, we tend to be a lot more familial than other countries. Countries in Asia, that is, it are more familial than other countries in, say, the West. And so even though officially we follow an individual-centric approach, I think practically the doctors find out that a lot of patients do consult with the family members, and a lot of decisions tend to be taken at a familial level. So not just for genetic testing, but a lot of other surgical interventions as well. So family dynamics become very important. Sometimes collectively the family will make decisions. I mean, not the whole family, but parts of the family. Maybe the immediate family will have a high say in what the patient decides.
Okay, so taking it a step further, what do you think are some of the challenges in implementing a cultural sensitive approach to genetic risk disclosure?
While cultural sensitivity is crucial for respecting diverse values, beliefs, and family dynamics, it can sometimes conflict with core ethical principles like personal autonomy, confidentiality, and duty to one. So, in a culture that prioritizes family involvement in health decisions, family decisions can conflict with patient autonomy. Like the case I mentioned, the patient whose father objected to her decision to take a genetic test. So it can be difficult to find a culturally sensitive way to resolve the situation in a way that takes into account both the patient's well-being as well as the family dynamics. So there isn't really a universal culturally sensitive approach to genetic risk disclosure. So what practically often happens when I talk to doctors and genetic counselors is that they will just try their best. So in this case, the doctor kept in touch with that particular patient. So a bit of above and beyond what's expected of just a regular doctor patient. So the doctor asked the patient, "You can contact me anytime," and so on. I understand that you might want to have a follow-up outside of your and she of what happened with the father and tried to follow up once in a while. That actually, I think from the doctor's account, didn't actually work. The patient lost drop out contact after a while. But sometimes extending that can help. So other doctors would say things like sometimes the patient has a difficult life home circumstances and they will just keep the communication channel open to provide support. And sometimes it takes quite a few months to resolve the situation, like to take the test or not to take the test, and so on. So after a lot of counseling and talking, and then the patient comes to a decision. Now, the decision may be not to take the test, but either way, I think extending that time space for the patient provides a sensitive way of handling the patient's preferences as well.
So, one last question before we wrap up this podcast. So, what advice would you give to individuals and families navigating the complexities of genetic testing and its ethical implications? Or how can the community better support individuals that are facing genetic health decisions?
Okay, so to answer the first part of the question, so genetic testing can be quite complex. So in Singapore, when patients who are thinking of taking a genetic test, they are all required to undergo genetic counseling. And they can also bring in their family members during these sessions. So I think that these sessions are very helpful and that individuals and family members should make use of these sessions because these are provided to you as a patient, and genetic counselors, doctors, they're all professionally trained to help individuals and their families, and they offer a range of support. This can range from interpreting the test results to discussing the possible impacts on family dynamics, navigating insurance, providing referrals to relevant healthcare professionals. Right. So, I think they should make use of the offered resources. On at a wider level for the communities, how can they better support the individuals? Well, I think one big important thing is the education. Because right now, genetic testing is still regarded as fairly new, although it's increasingly used, and I think for a lot of the medical professionals, is something that they are familiar with, but maybe as for the layperson, we are not so familiar with genetic testing, so we might have preconceived notions about what it means. We might think that, oh, if you test positive, means you would definitely get the disease or something. So understanding that it only provides you a probability, a risk that you have that condition and that you develop it and so on. Understanding all this has to be explained. So, I think education about what genetic testing is and how it's not a fatal issue. Because I think a long time ago, something that's a genetic disease might be regarded as kind of fatal. But nowadays, I think there's a lot more we can do to treat diseases. So education in general about genetic testing, about genetic diseases, these are quite important. And so if I think if people understand this a bit more, they understand that sometimes it's not that big a deal, or maybe in some cases it can be a big deal and what are the implications. But they can also support the patient better, and also understand what it means for themselves. So there's some concern that certain kinds of conditions, like say mental health conditions, are considered quite stigmatized. So people might not want to test for it. They might not want to tell the family about it, and so on. So if you understand more about it, I think people are more open to the idea. This will better support the patients. And I mean, and since it's all about hereditary conditions, it also supports the entire family.
Okay, so thank you so much, Dr. Serene, for joining us today and sharing your invaluable insights on genetic risk disclosure. So I believe that your expertise and compassion have shed light on such an important and also sensitive topic. So we truly appreciate the time and effort you have taken to be with us tonight.